The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Yes, it is, and welcome back this second hour of our April 23rd, 2020 broadcast. It's a delight to bring back to our airwaves our friend David Riaboy. He is a political analyst, a political consultant, and a national security expert. David, welcome back. I hope you guys are doing well.
Yes, my friend. How are you?
I am fine. It's nice to speak with you. I want to read my audience. I don't think you'll argue with me. You can beat me up later if you do. I want to read my audience what you emailed me this morning. I'm so furious and heartsick about what's happening in this country. I think we're well past the point where we can recover quickly, and it's self-inflicted. I'm afraid the media will have made the people so crazy and terrified that real money won't be spent again for months and months. Self-inflicted, David. Self-inflicted. I was thinking about how we were 19 years ago with 9/11 when the mantra was let's roll. Seems here it's let's roll up.
Yeah. I mean, that encapsulates it pretty well. I think the big lesson that I think we've learned a number of lessons here in the last couple of months, but I'll tell you, the big one that I learned is that regardless of how some of us may feel hopeful that that we have sort of decreased the power and the ability of the media to commit all of these all of their typical brainwashing influence games, they still remain quite powerful. I think the hysteria in this country as it relates to this virus is a good deal media manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that the virus is nothing.
Yeah, no, the virus exists. we're not saying it doesn't exist, right?
But but I think a different president, a different set of political priorities, let's say, from on the part of the media, and the coverage would be completely different. Already, a friend was telling me today that, hey, isn't it funny that we no longer see a lot of the kind of grim milestone stats that we used to see, and nobody refers back to the initial projections that that the media was using to terrify us only a month ago or 6 weeks ago. Because the projections have largely fallen apart, and they can't really present that on one hand and not have the people see that this whole thing has basically been a bust. I mean, thank God it didn't go in that direction, but I think there was a lot of motivation for the media to grab this and run with it and try to make as many people hysterical as possible. And going to the email that you read, I think they've succeeded in such a large extent that if the government decided to ease up on all of the business and travel restrictions and things like that tomorrow, I think the people will still be so terrified from the last, months worth of coronavirus news and hysteria that they just won't go out and they won't go to do the things that make the economy work. And we're going to be in a bad position, I think, for the next several months. It's not something you just get in the car, turn the key, and go.
Right.
I think that would have been possible maybe 2 weeks ago, or even Yeah, but I think it would have been possible maybe 2 weeks ago. But at this point, the calculus for a lot of people who are, you know, either in business or in small business or whatever, it's just going to be very, very, very different. Some people will be able to go back to work as soon as, you know, stores and restaurants and things like that will open up, and that's wonderful. But for other people who have small businesses, people who are consultants, provide services and things like that, you know, their customers will not return for a good long while. And it's going to be very, very hard on people in the middle class.
In part because we have scared the hell out of people, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Scared the hell out of them. And there's an investment in some of that. I think there's a natural proclivity for the – proclivity's too easy a word. There's a natural it's just embedded in the DNA of all media. There's a natural part of the media's DNA that – wants to get a headline, and the best way to get a headline is to have a big story. And the best way to have a big story is to have something that is either gory or frightening, right? Or horrible. Yeah. Well, here you can do all three, and they've become, I believe, invested in promoting it. I believe it's aided and abetted by the fact that they're centered in New York City. And of course, this virus is at its worst in New York City. You don't live in New York. I don't live in New York. We know it well, but we don't live there. And we look around and we have to remind the rest of the world that just because CNN says something or just because the NYT, New York Times, says something, it doesn't mean that's the rest of the country. The New York Times and CNN no more understand Pear, South Dakota, than they do Phoenix, Arizona. They really don't. They really don't. But they want us to act like we are queens. That's my view.
Yes, I think that's right. I think I read that Dennis Prager in a column this week asked what would happen if the kind of hot spot of the virus was actually in Nebraska as opposed to New York City.
Yes.
Would they even cover it in the New York Times?
Right.
Would they even cover it in major media? And I think the answer is clearly no. You know, it would get a mention the same way.
They certainly wouldn't shut down millions of jobs in New York City. They certainly wouldn't do that, right?
No, of course.
And I would be with them, and I would support them not doing that, by the way.
And these guys still didn't shut down the subways.
Right.
You know, I mean, I saw it just 2 days ago. It made headlines. Oh, we canceled the gay pride parade.
Right.
We canceled the gay pride parade, like, now?
Right.
You demanded that everybody cancel everything a month ago. But you guys are just now getting to the point where you're starting to cancel parades.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's bonkers. It's a sense of entitlement. It's, you know, I mean, it's not surprising for those of us who've tangled with the major media from a lot of these from the Acela corridor and their particular brand of insularity when it comes to issues that are important. But a confluence of different motivations coming together here that are encouraging this, and we've seen it for the last 2 weeks where the president is trying to make moves and say, hey, it's really important that we start opening the economy back up, and the media wants to take his head off.
Right, they want to take his head off for that, as they want to take anyone's head off for any possible glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel, whether it's about a therapeutic medicine that can help treat the virus, whether it's fellow citizens social shaming and virtue shaming. Maybe it's called health shaming. Maybe we have to come up with a new term over it. You retweeted let me tell our audience, if you want to follow David Riboy on Twitter, it's well worth it. He tweets great stuff. He retweets great stuff at Dave Riaboy, R-E-A-B-O-I is the way to do it. Follow him. You retweeted someone this morning, I don't know, or perhaps you do, doesn't matter, saying those insisting it's never going to be safe to resume normal life are absolutely exhausting and downright toxic. Their defeatist coping methods require scolding those who refuse to join their delusion. That's all true. I think we're, you know, in all the conversations about health, we're not doing enough on economic health. We're certainly not talking enough about civic health. We are turning Americans against one another here, David.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think.
Let me do this. Let me have you pause on that thought because we're going to a break. I can keep you another segment, can't I?
Absolutely.
Perfect. Let's pick up on that theme, economic and civic health, when we return. We'll be right back with more from David Riaboy. I'm Seth Leibson. He's David. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. It's a delight to have David Riaboy with us. He is well worth following on Twitter. He's a political consultant, political analyst, and national security expert. And you can follow him on Twitter at Dave Riaboy, R-E-A-B-O-I. David, turning Americans against one another. Let me read another tweet from this person you retweeted. Since day one of this ordeal, public discourse has been directed by the hysterics and loudest voices who need to exercise their anxieties in a public space. It's performative and gross, and they're minimizing public health. I mean, I think there's a lot of that, but heaven forfend, by the way, anyone exercise their First Amendment rights on behalf of doing the natural thing, which is going to work.
Yeah. That's, you know, we have moved to a place in our country now where this idea of, I'm reminded of when Governor Cuomo, yesterday, I think, was arguing with a reporter,
mm-hmm.
saying that, you know, basically making the "if we save one life"
right.
argument,
right?
Which is just, it's so silly, and I mean, at what point did we get to be really so fearful?
Right. Right.
I understand that, you know, if you're looking at 2 million casualties in the United States, I understand the point of being fearful.
Yeah.
But so that initial response was maybe justified. Maybe not, considering even those projections early on were a little bit sketchy. But, you know, no one wanted to look too closely at the numbers.
Right.
But by this point,
right.
you know, heck, even over the last 3 weeks,
right.
or so, we knew that those models, those projections had fallen apart, and we knew from common sense that this thing was a lot more contagious and simultaneously a lot less deadly than we were led to believe initially, and yet we all decided that it would be a good look to be terrified.
Yeah.
You know, Brian Stelter decided that it would be a good look to, you know, admit that he was crying over this.
Right.
You know, I guess people can cry over whatever they want, but it's a different thing when you come out and announce it to the world. You know, at that point, you think, hey, yes, I'm justified in announcing that I cried over this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're a different country than we were. I mean, you made that point earlier. We're a far different country that we were even you know, 20 years ago, around 9/11. And I was in New York for 9/11, and I'll tell you, there was very much a let's roll attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and frankly, it wasn't even from the people who live in Manhattan. It was an outer borough attitude. Even during 9/11, the folks in Staten Island and in Brooklyn and Queens, you know, they were the ones that really stepped up more than anyone else at that time. But now it seems like this attitude is gone, and it's replaced by something else.
Surrender, I think, to the worst fears. Surrender to the worst fears, and I think it's driven in large part, obviously, by the media's interest. I can't get out of my head. I just cannot get out of my head something Adam Carolla testified to in Congress a few years ago, talking about the generation just younger than us, one generation below us. David, you and I are about the same age. When he said they grew up dipped in Purell, playing soccer games where they never kept score, and we're asking them to be mature. He went on to say this: studies have shown that if you take people and put them in zero gravity environments like astronauts, they lose muscle mass and bone density. And we're taking these kids in the name of protection, and we're putting them in a zero gravity environment. They're losing muscle mass and bone density. You know, we taught them that they should be afraid of ideas. We taught them they should be afraid of everything. We taught them that Donald Trump wasn't conservative. He wasn't right wing. He was fascist and Hitler. Everything has been thrown to the extremes, the extreme fear. You know, the dial has been turned way, way, way past 11 on all of our analyses. And that's not healthy for this democracy or any democracy.
I agree with you, though I have a counter argument, or maybe an argument to the side. So at the same time as let's say society and culture and the media is pushing us to be terrified on one hand. On the other hand, they're really not pushing us to be terrified of economic collapse.
Right.
That is certain to come.
Right.
Certain to come if
24 million unemployed is you know, pretty stark.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't seen a single article on this.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a single article, I mean, you know, outside conservative media, of
course, right.
that addresses what is looming on the horizon.
Yeah.
And part of it, I think it has to do with the fact that a lot of these folks on the left have gotten so used to the idea of calamity and societal collapse by natural phenomena, climate change, and this and that, and like these kind of abstract natural things, that's the only calamity, that's the only apocalyptic scenario that they understand.
That's right. That's a nice way to put it. They understand apocalypse, and if it doesn't come in 12 years from climate change, well, maybe this is it. You know, then the apocalypse is here. Apocalypse now, if you will. Right. Right.
Right. And you know, I mean, and you can say also maybe that has to do with the way they look at politics and economics as well, because you know, because you're dealing with a bunch of folks who don't understand how wealth is created.
Right.
You're dealing with a bunch of folks that basically, you know, come after wealth is created and figure out how to spend that money.
You bet.
And you know, so you have this perfect storm where it's like, you know, it's completely outside of the comprehension of the depression is completely outside of the comprehension of just about anyone who's gone to college in the last 20 years.
You bet. And seeing America fail is not the worst thing, because the most famous thing Andrew Cuomo said until March was America was never a great country, right? Right. Right.
What a shame.
What a shame. David Riaboy, you're great. Thanks for spending some of your afternoon
with
us. Appreciate
you.
You.
Stay safe, buddy.
God bless you.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.